Welcome to the EINIS Network podcast series. EINIS stands for the European Network on International Student Mobility that aims to connect research and practice. Enjoy our podcast and get to know the latest news on international student mobility.
Hello, dear listeners, tuning in for the special podcast brought to you by EINIS, or European Network on International Student Mobility. The main aim and objective of the action is to address the pressing need for systematic, interdisciplinary and international exchange of knowledge on theoretical frameworks, research, methodologies, findings, and best practices in the field of international student mobility. I am Sanam Ruhi, the leader of Working Group 2 that looks at social inequalities in access to and during international student mobility. This working group that I'm a part of, that I'm leading, will focus on social inequalities in the context of ISM, or international student mobility, along the lines of, for example, students' gender, age, socioeconomic background, and ethnicity. We have the honor today to have with us a Working Group 2 member, Dr. Elisa Palma Alves, who is a recent PhD graduate and who will be speaking about her work with us today in a Q&A format. It's a pleasure to have you, Elisa. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sanam. Thank you for this invitation. I'm fine. I'm very glad to be here with you and share a little bit about my PhD research.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So I think to set the ball rolling, Elisa, maybe we should first start to talk about your PhD research itself so that our listeners can know what you are researching on. I know, but I want our listeners to know what do you work on? What is your research areas? And what are the key takeaways from your research that you want our listeners to know about?
Okay. That's a great question. So I think just to start, tell the listeners, I am based in Portugal. And two of the largest international groups in Portugal, well, from historical and even contemporary reasons, they are from the former colonies of Portugal in Africa. And the two largest groups are from Angola and Cape Verde. So this is the base of my PhD research. And despite this being two of the largest international groups, there is a limited knowledge, you know, on these students and on their social and spatial trajectories.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And for instance, what are these students' future mobility projects? And by future mobility projects, I mean, do they return home? Or do they remain abroad after graduation? Mm-hmm. Do these projects they have from the start, do they change over time? Mm-hmm. If so, why is that? What are the reasons behind all this, behind this mobility projects, but for the future, mm-hmm. right? Because all students, when they move abroad, most of them, at least from my research, most of them, they have a plan, they have a project for their future.
Sure.
I think these were my research questions to understand what were their future mobility projects, if they change over time or not, and the reasons, and how can we frame this and reflect. So I adopted a mixed methodology, and I combined qualitative and quantitative methods. Mm-hmm. I also interviewed institutional key actors from the three countries, so from Portugal, Angola, and Cape Verde, mm-hmm. to understand a bit better the economic and the political institutional context behind this mobility. But, well, the core of my fieldwork was done with the students and also with graduates. Mm-hmm. So I did an online survey, and I also did almost 90 interviews. And many of these interviews were follow-up interviews. Mm-hmm. And this was something very important, I think, mm-hmm. at least the most important part of my field work, because I interviewed many students mm-hmm. In a first moment mm-hmm. when they were closed to graduate. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months, 1 year, 2 years after mm-hmm. to check what happens and to understand what was their trajectory, how life happened in the meantime during. Well,
fantastic. I mean, usually a lot of people don't do this kind of following up. So I think that is really a USP for your research project. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. It was very, very interesting indeed. And I was glad I could do that. And I think that was the moment when the research became interesting. I know I'm a little bit suspect to say that came interesting, but it was really good because it was in that moment when I did the follow-ups that I start understanding much more. And even many things I didn't thought initially, you go to the field work with a few ideas, but then you have just to be open to see what you get. And mm-hmm. It was very nice. I discovered that many of them, for different reasons, were not able to follow their initial plan, or they just simply changed the plan because in the meantime, they understood that it was better to remain in Portugal for a little bit longer, for instance, to have access to Portuguese nationality. Mm-hmm. Many, many reasons explain these changes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just a question, follow up, quick question. So when you say that they stayed a bit longer, so initially they did not plan to stay that long.
Exactly. Initially, most of them wanted to return home right after graduation. Okay. So, and especially the Angolans, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. the Angolan students, because I tried to compare mm-hmm. these two groups, and especially the Angolans, they mentioned that they were planning to return home right after graduation, but in the meantime, they decided to postpone the return. And on the contrary, from the beginning, more Cape Verdeans, at least comparing, more Cape Verdeans, mm-hmm. comparing to the Angolans, mm-hmm. They told me that they were planning to stay abroad, mm-hmm. not to return home, at least not so many comparing to the Angolans.
Yeah, that is a very interesting contrast between these two regions. Yeah.
One of the explanations, it has to do precisely with the inequalities.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. We'll come to that. And if you want to move ahead, and maybe we can come back to the inequalities part, could you also, because since you did multi-sited research, you did mixed method research, again, very interesting to have a more comprehensive understanding of student mobility to Portugal. I also want to know how your own positionality inflected your research topic, So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. This is a very, very important question. Yeah, I remember a quote from a Colombian geographer that I used in my PhD thesis, and he said that the first step before conducting fieldwork, and mm-hmm. I'm quoting, is to consider our own positionality. Mm-hmm. Of course, the way your values, your subjectivity, they change the research, and they are part of the construction of knowledge. Well, I thought about this, and I realized that it's a bit hard to be. Well, first, to be Portuguese doing research in Portugal, mm-hmm. Which was the former metropolis of in the context of the colonies, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. being interviewing students from Africa, from mm-hmm. Angola and Cape Verde, who were from the former colonies. So there is in the past, we have a power relation that changed the dynamics, mm-hmm. and being white and having black participants, sometimes I felt this was hard mm-hmm. to deal with. There was a sensation that it was us and them, I was part of the majority group, mm-hmm. and maybe because of that, it inflects the choice of the research topic. But mm-hmm. what I tried to do, at mm-hmm. least this was my biggest concern, was to forget a little bit, or at least as much as possible in the right way, to forget that I was part of that group, the majority group, and just be the researcher without those any values, without. I don't know. I think Well, I'm not being very clear about this. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me ask you one question. Maybe then you could give us an answer on that. Was it easier? I mean, the commonsensical understanding is that perhaps because you are a white woman, it might have been easier to access. But I know that ground reality is much more complicated to have access to people, you know, to follow them, to especially you followed them over for quite some time. So was it easier or were there much more complexities on the ground when you do this kind of research that cross all kinds of boundaries, you know? And also you have to keep in mind the colonial past.
So, yes, I think, well, I must be honest, I didn't feel it harder, you know. For me, I think the field work was, yes, it was kind of easy. What I mean is that the participants were always very, most of them very, very nice, very cooperate. They cooperate very much. It was funny because I was pregnant during the first stage of the interviews.
Okay.
And with many of them, I had to tell them that, because sometimes in the middle of the interview I was feeling bad and I had to stop the interview. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think that part or being just another human, mm-hmm. not the researcher, mm-hmm. but just a person who is talking with them and has a normal life and is a student, I think this was also important.
Yes.
Being a student doing the PhD, many of them were doing their masters, a few were also doing their PhDs, so it helped to
connect,
you know, to do a connection with them.
Excellent.
And in the end of the interviews I felt that, well, it was like being not a friend, but we got very close. Mm-hmm. And it was easy to do another interview 6 months later, 1 year later.
Okay, that really sounds excellent. So I'll move on to other question that I have. So if you are to generalize your findings, what are the major impediments international students from the Global South face in higher education when they come to a country in the EU like Portugal?
Well, considering my research, I would say that moving from the Global South into the EU is a great challenge. In the case of the Angolan and Cape Verdean students in Portugal, they might have the Portuguese language in common. They may have vacation in Portugal before. They may live with relatives or friends who were or who are already in Portugal. And these factors can help for sure, but will not minimize as much as the students expect their academic and social integration. So there are many challenges that are still present, even if they have this background, I would say, these networks working, these previous relations with Portugal. Mm. I think first, because many of them, for many of them, and even for students who study in Portugal, to deal with the academic code is hard. So this is one of the first difficulties they face when they arrive. Many of them arrive late in the semester, so it's hard also to follow the lessons, to have access to the courses contents. Many of them also face some prejudice of being Black. It is still present in the Portuguese society. It's very covert. And it is interesting because there are many studies about this. There is a, it is a really covert prejudice, because people know that the norm is not to be, not to discriminate, but still there is discrimination, especially from the older people to these students. Mm-hmm. And I think here in this situation, the relationship between the origin country and the destination country, this is a major factor, because in Portugal, these international students coming from the former African colonies, many times they are seen not as international students, but as migrants, you know. And many of them who I interviewed, many of them, they feel like they are in the bottom of the social hierarchy. Okay. And they are filled like that by the host society. So it's mm-hmm. a a joint situation that many times leave them to unsuccess trajectories, or at least not so well succeed as they were expecting initially. You know, many of them are great students at home, mm-hmm. and they arrive in Portugal and they have many difficulties, and they're even in Portuguese, their self-esteem goes really down.
Mm.
This might be different with other students from other places in other European countries. But here in Portugal, this is what I think it still happens makes it harder for them.
I think that's really important that these things are not really talked about. When we talk about numbers and we talk about motivations, we forget that we are also humans, you know, and self-esteem. I'm very happy that you brought up something very interesting, and affects around mobility is also very important, and we have to pay attention to that. So yes. And would there be any more impediments that you could talk of?
Well, more impediments. I think there are many times legal impediments.
Yes.
And this is a hard situation. And what I found, which is interesting, but sadly at the same time, I think, is that the law mm-hmm. doesn't seem very clear to all the actors in the society, all the actors that are involved dealing with the law. For instance, they told me, well, we are students, we are not allowed to work.
Mm. Okay.
But in fact, the Portuguese law allows them to work.
Okay.
I only realized this in the end of the field work, but mm-hmm. my hypothesis, or at least my theory, is that what happens here is that this is like a narrative from mm-hmm. the past that students cannot work, and companies just mm-hmm. use that narrative to not hire, or at least not hire, no, to not do a contract with
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
So keep them in a precarious situation without a contract, saying mm-hmm. that, well, you are a student, I cannot hire you, mm-hmm. I cannot do a contract, you know. And this is like a snowball.
Yeah.
And they do not have the sometimes the knowledge or the power to say, no, this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on the side of the companies, they just take the advantages, you know. Yeah.
Wow, this is such a very important and fascinating insight, and unfortunate insight.
I think
this is so, so relevant for a working group like ours. This is really important. Like, you know, although there are legal measures, students, migrants are not aware of them and then get exploited in the process. And you have given examples, excellent examples, and you've even tried to understand why it stems from where. Excellent. So would you want to say something more, or should we move to the other question?
If you want, we can move.
Okay. But before we do, I mean, I have a small aside question. So you mentioned that, you know, Cape Verdeans usually come with the idea of staying back, but in Portugal, but not the Angolans. So could you explain why that is?
Yes, this is very interesting. I think one of the main reasons, it's just one of the main reasons. I'm not saying that this is the first reason, okay? I just want to be clear that it's not the biggest one. It's one of the main reasons is that Angola and Cape Verde have very different economies.
Mm-hmm.
And the way students feel that they will have opportunities back home is mm-hmm. quite different. Mm-hmm. And the Angolans do believe that when they return, they will have those opportunities. They will have a good salary, a good job. Whereas the Cape Verdeans, some of them also think the same, but a larger group, comparing to the Angolans,
mm-hmm.
think that, well, living in Cape Verde is harder. They do not have so many opportunities. The quality of life is different, although it's safe. They do not have the same goods or as they have in Portugal. And this is one of the main factors. And another one, which I think is very close to the Cape Verdean case, is that the topic of diaspora, mm-hmm. is very, very present mm. in the speech of the Cape Verdeans.
Mm.
Many of them told me, well, since I'm a child that I dream about living in Portugal, I always wanted to go out Cape Verde. Mm. And it seems like the Angolans are much more, how can I say this? They want to, feels like they have a duty to mm. their country. So mm. they have to leave and return to give back to their home country.
Okay, now that is super interesting. And I am thinking about my own research contexts where I work with high-skilled Indians who are migrating to the US as doctors and engineers, as well as working class migrants who go to Gulf. Even though they have an opportunity to return, many of them don't want to because of the idea that, you know, because of there's a lot of narrative built around being a diasporic Indian. And somehow it is related to prestige and status. So it's a very interesting contrast, absolutely fascinating.
It is.
I will move on then to the next question that I have, which is how do inequalities manifest in these international students' life throughout their international student mobility trajectory? Mm-hmm. You've already mentioned a bit of it, but you know, now if you take a more like approach and tell me something, that would be great.
I think two of the largest inequalities I saw was, well, one of the economic inequalities of the origin countries, something that really shape the way students see themselves, see their future. It's quite interesting. And also because of that, there is another factor that mm-hmm. is really the inequalities regarding students' social and economic background.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain extent, it is related to the economy of the origin countries,
mm-hmm.
but still is more than that. And here, considering these two kind of inequalities, let's say the economic inequalities of the origin countries and their social background,
mm-hmm.
the Angolans are in a much better situation comparing to the Cape Verdeans.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Cape Verdean students depend much more on scholarships to come to Portugal to study.
Interesting.
The Angolans depend much more on their parents, for instance, or on their families. They even can have loans to pay the studies, mm-hmm. something that is not so used in the case of the Cape Verdeans.
Mm.
And this has a big influence on their trajectory over studies, mm-hmm. after studies, if mm-hmm. they are willing to return or not.
Mm.
And for instance, one of the main findings of my research was to construct four mobility profiles. And these mobility profiles are dependent on these inequalities. For instance, one of the profiles are the maximizers.
Mm-hmm.
And the maximizers are mostly composed by Angolans
mm-hmm.
who came to Portugal just to do, for instance, the bachelor and then move home, return mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, they realize that doing a master's mm-hmm. will be better. Mm-hmm. And they have that chance. So they remain in Portugal and they have the capital needed to remain a bit longer. So they maximize their trajectory here. You have the dreamers, mostly composed also by Angolans who would like to remain in Portugal after graduation because they think that life here is better. You have access to health, education in a way much better than in Angola. But then there are no fair opportunities for them in the job market because mm-hmm. they are seen as low-skilled migrants. So they mm-hmm. decided to return, but they are dreamers because they are always thinking, well, if I had that chance, I would stay there. Mm-hmm. And then you have two other profiles, the mm-hmm. world citizens, mm-hmm. composed mostly by Cape Verdeans, who move out Cape Verde with the idea that they could return, mm-hmm. they could go anywhere. They are interested in following a good professional career, so they could go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And another profile, also mm-hmm. composed with Cape Verdeans, the runners, those who move out of Cape Verde and do not want to return because there they think there's only poverty. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, these four profiles, they show great inequalities among these two groups.
This is excellent. I mean, this Weberian ideal type that you have drawn, it's absolutely fascinating. The dreamers, the
thank you.
And the mobilizers. Excellent. Excellent. That's such a good takeaway from our conversation. And maybe one last but very important question for our network I would want to ask you is, how does a network like Ennis benefit a fresh PhD like yourself? Although your CV says a lot, you've had a good career, you've published quite some articles and book chapters, but still, I mean, if you could tell us how a network like Ennis benefits a fresh PhD like yourself.
Awesome. I think, first, I'm very happy to be part of Ennis network. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest benefits is that Ennis is a high quality network with very competent researchers, international researchers who are working in different areas of international student mobility. And this allows me a great contact with all these colleagues to learn more about many fields within the international student mobility umbrella, let's say, and also to disseminate my work, like being here with you today, which is, well, it is great. And I think this is the most important part of the network, to know many other people, many other researchers and research works, and to share also my plans, my ideas. I think this is the biggest benefit.
Yes, and we are also very lucky to have you as one of our members. And we obviously enrich each other, and that is the idea of this NSN network. So it was excellent talking to you, Eliza. It was lovely to hear your more details about your work. And I hope our listeners also enjoyed as much as I did. And I also want to thank all my listeners who have tuned in for this particular podcast. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Sanam. Thank you very much for the opportunity, for the invitation.
This podcast was powered by the European Union-founded Coast Association.